We have already weathered the first freeze of the season, and cooler temperatures are here. But don't abandon your garden just yet. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Today on our monthly gardening show, we'll talk about boosting tree health without chemicals, cool crop planting, and so much more. And, of course, our experts are here to answer your questions. Joining me now are Cincinnati Nature Center Director of Conservation, Corey Christopher, Madison Tree Care and Landscaping CEO, John Butcher, and Civic Garden Center Director of Education, Mary Dudley. Welcome back, everybody.
Hi. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you all here. John, let's talk trees. What should we be doing with our trees and shrubs to ensure they have a good winter?
Well, I think that for the most part, trees are in pretty good shape all by themselves without doing anything. But if you wanted to improve the odds of the tree surviving or doing better, having a good mulch layer down over the winter is always a good thing, especially with some of the cold-sensitive shrubs. With trees in particular, I don't know if we want to get into this now or there's a chance later, but vertical mulching is like a aeration process that we do with trees that really helps them produce better root systems, and this is a great time to do it while the soil is pliable and the trees are dormant. There's more extreme versions of that that we do. One system is called radial trenching, where we're actually creating big spokes for the trees to grow in and doing a little bit of a soil replacement thing. I would reserve that for more stressed trees, but there's lots of things we can do to improve their health without putting any chemicals on them at all.
Talk more about vertical mulching. What the heck is that?
So it's a weird term for basically aerating the root system. And what we're doing is we're putting 2 to 3 inch diameter holes in the ground, 8 to 12 inches deep. And usually you're putting a little bit of fertilizer in the bottom of the hole. And then you're adding some type of aggregate that's going to keep the airway open so that oxygen can readily get down in the soil. That really helps with trees with compacted soils. It really helps with if there's sites with poor drainage, it can improve drainage a little bit. And it absolutely helps stressed trees kind of get over the hurdle a little bit. And it helps healthy trees stay healthier.
And it doesn't mess with their roots?
So there's a way to do it with an air spade, which is an air tool that doesn't hurt the roots at all. With a drill, we're out a little bit further, and the benefit to the negative of using the drill is still really worth it to do, even if you may catch a little root here or there.
Okay. Well, you can hear that expertise, so our experts are here to answer your questions. Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. And John, this is all stuff that can be done to help trees without any chemicals, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Well, you say zero chemicals. If you're going to put a fertilizer down, okay, even if it's organic, I would still call that some type of chemical compound, I guess. I don't know, but it can all be organic.
Okay. Well, what about compost tea? I'm going to ask you about this, Corey. Do you recommend that for trees and shrubs? Is that something you're into?
So I do compost, and a lot of my associates in the field will make compost tea. And for me, I don't like the term lazy gardener because I don't think I'm lazy. It's, for me personally, I don't tend to use compost tea in the fall. I found a really great source for free mulch. It's leaves. They fall out of the sky and they land on your yard. And for me, I just put all of those in my flower bed. So I'm mulching now as I rake those leaves out of my grass.
Do you shred them up first?
I don't. You can, but there are a lot of moths, for example, that'll have like their pupa in some of those dried leaves. So for me, it's like, you know, I don't mind the dried leaves. I don't mind what that looks like. So I just rake them up, move them into my flower beds. And as they decay, and you know, as we get rain like we have right now, that'll naturally make that same kind of nutrient-rich tea that'll go straight back into my soil, and it saves on mulch next year. And if there's any areas that you think, I don't really want leaves in my flower beds, well, you know, choose the one or two flower beds in your front yard that you really want to look more coiffed. Add your regular mulch there. But for all the other ones, just let the leaves lay. Just don't bother taking them off your property. Just put them around your plant.
And it's okay if they get just wet and slimy stick together?
It's even, yes. As long as you don't have 6 inches of leaves, you're going to be just fine. Okay. Yeah, it is. It's not going to do anything. It'll keep the weeds away. And it's not lazy. It's guilt-free is what I call it.
It's conserving.
It is conserving.
That's why you're the director of conservation at the Nature Center.
Do you have any leaves that you prefer over the others? Like maybe like I find pear leaves to be really mucky and gross, and I don't like those as much.
I know, but I will say at a previous home, we had an American holly. And those leaves I would take out just because they're so sharp and spiky.
They're angry leaves.
Yeah. But otherwise, no. They all get raked up into a pile and shoved into the nearest flower bed. And I haven't had any issues so far.
Okay. Well, we have some callers on the line. Thanks to them for listening and calling early. Hey, Andrew. Thanks for listening. What's your question?
Hi. I had a question about mowing leaves into your lawn. So I always mow my leaves to mulch the lawn. I got a couple of big oaks that drop leaves late. And I know that some insect species lay their eggs in those leaf piles. And I didn't want to sort of mulch those insect species up with the leaves. So I was really wondering, when is the latest time to mulch your leaves? What are some good practices around that?
That is such a thoughtful question, Andrew. Corey, what do you think?
You know, this is one of those times where I think if we lived in a perfect world where we could always do exactly what was right, I would say let's not mow the leaves, just rake them into the flower beds. But I would say for someone, if you're asking that question, it means that you're probably already doing a lot in your yard that's thoughtful to the ecology of your yard. And so if it means that you just need to mow some leaves just because it's easier and that's what you got to do, I would say don't worry too much about it. Just go ahead and mow those leaves, put the leaf, the clippings from the leaves in your flower beds. But if you don't mind the way they look, you could get around that just by, like if you have a bag on your mower, you can just raise the cutting height of your mower. And instead of having it go through the mulching, just send it directly to the bag. That's what I do in my yard. So they don't actually get mulched up. They just get sucked into the bag and then I pour them over onto the flower beds.
Yeah, it's a good thing Joe Boggs isn't here, man.
I know.
He would be so upset that you're like, mulch those insect eggs.
I would say if you're, you know, I don't want to be one of those that tries to give people such strict guidance to do all these things and then it's just sort of eco-shaming. And like, you know, it's best not to mow them, but if you have to mow them because that's what you need to do at that time, then again, guilt-free.
Well, and I do understand that for oaks because they have such hard leaves, so much fiber in those leaves. So breaking up that surface area really does help them break down faster.
Yeah.
I have a little important note to add is that when we're dumping them in the flower beds, it's really important not to pile them up on the tree trunks or right around the base of the trees. You can start to suffocate and create an environment for girdling roots to exist. And you really don't want to get it too thick in any one area. And, you know, I think Corey said 6 inches and below, you're fine. You probably are because it'll be 2 inches by the spring when everything breaks down. But if you're starting to accumulate more than 3 inches over a period of time, you can really start to mess with the way the water infiltrates into the soil. And you want to just make sure you're not piling on endlessly in the same area and to distribute those leaves well across the beds.
Yeah, because one of the things that I tell people is you don't need to mulch every year. You may not need that mulch. So, you know, stick your finger down there. And if you've already got a couple inches of old mulch, you're probably fine.
Does that help, Andrew?
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Sure thing. Best of luck with your leaves there. And we have Allison on the line. Hi, Allison. Thanks for listening. What's your question?
Hi. I bought some 12-foot spruces about 2 years ago, planted. They're doing fine. I've watered like crazy. My water bill's huge. And I'm wondering, how many years do you have to water once a week? Or do I need to keep watering these? Or have they rooted in by now?
how long ago did you plant them? 3 years?
Going on 2 years ago.
Yeah, so I'd say by the third year, they should be well-established and rooted in. However, spruce trees, their biggest vulnerability, in my opinion, is drought. And so if we get into a drought period, I would highly recommend watering your spruce trees and most of your other evergreens when we get into severe drought periods.
Does that help, Allison?
Okay. Yes, it does.
Okay. Well, good luck with that water bill.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, again, we're taking your questions about gardening today. For the full hour, we've got experts here to answer your questions. Call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Mary, before our callers, we were talking about composting, and Corey gave his tips for, you know, the leaves. What are you doing in your garden this time of year when it comes to compost?
Well, we just had several amazing children's programs and different community events that resulted in these pumpkins. And so we're taking a lot of pumpkin scraps right now and kind of putting those out. And something that we want to pay attention to is just making sure that material is well aerated, because we get kind of these heavy rains and then we're not able to have it be as light and fluffy as we might like. So making sure that you're still adding that carbon-based material that's going to balance out the nitrogen that you're adding to your pile, but then also being cautious when you are turning it. So as you want to maintain that aeration, you also don't want to disturb the internal temperature, which you want to stay pretty warm so that all your microorganisms and critters can stay happy during the season. So on those really cold days, even if you haven't gotten out there in a little while and maybe it's on your calendar, if you can look ahead and see if there's a warmer time where you could wait to turn your pile, that would be a good idea. And watch out for those volunteers in the spring. You know, who knows if you're going to be growing some squash or some pumpkins once those seeds start to germinate. So just pay attention to that.
Okay. Well, we have a question from Peter. Peter emailed, "I have a swamp white oak about 12 feet high planted 3 years ago, which has peeling bark. The bark began peeling last summer. The peels are very rigid, fairly thick, and still firmly attached to the tree. Any idea why this might be occurring? The tree is planted on a gentle slope at the foot of a hay field, and there are fractured field tiles in the area that provide a fairly constant source of moisture, even in dry weather." He attached a photo to illustrate the problem, which our experts looked at before the show. John, what do you think about this?
Well, it's really hard to see in the picture exactly what's going on, but what is normal for swamp white oaks is to have peely bark. And as new growth pushes out, the old bark can slough off. And this may not be completely typical for what you see on an individual swamp white oak or most of them, but with genetic variation, some trees are extra peely.
Aren't we all extra peely?
That's right. That's right. But it, I would want to see a little bit more of the tree and be able to, it looked like there were some inconsistencies in the trunk taper where there's the lighter brown color in the picture that may still be functional bark on the outside, even though it's really thin and no damage done. So if the rest of the tree looks good, I don't know that I'd panic much about it, but I would want to see more pictures to fully analyze that.
Okay, Peter. So if you've got more pictures, our producer emailed you. We'd love to see more pictures. We have Tim on the line. Hey, Tim, what's your question or comment?
Well, I tilled under my garden this fall, and I planted some ryegrass that came up very nice. And I'm wondering if I should till that that ryegrass under now. Should I wait till the spring and till it under before I plant my garden?
Do you have thoughts on that, Mary?
I mean, I think that it depends on your preference. It is not going to, really break down that quickly. And so if you tilled it under now, you might be able to, take advantage of a little bit more early breakdown. However, if you expose that soil and we get some heavy rains, that could lead to erosion depending on where you're at, or just a little bit damaging of that soil structure. So I would leave it as a cover crop. If you decide to till it under in the spring, or even just, pull it out and kind of use it as a green manure, just do it early, because rye can have pretty deep roots. And so if you let it go for too long, that can be very difficult to take out. But if it was me, I would leave it.
Hope that helps, Tim. You can take that off your to-do list.
Yeah, that sounds good. I'll wait till spring.
Okay. Well, thanks so much. Have a good one.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We have Cynthia on the line. Hi, Cynthia. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Thanks. A friend told me that I had an infestation of the woolly aphid on my ginkgo. Not ginkgo tree, the mimosa tree. And it was a pretty bad infestation this fall. And the droppings, it's called honeydew, went on my vegetable and perennial flower bed below the tree. I used two rounds of a DIY spray. I think it had hydrogen peroxide in it, but I'm not sure. I don't remember what it was. It had soap in it and something. And I did two rounds of that. My question is, are they really gone? I realize it's after frost, but will they come back in the spring? And have they damaged my perennial flower garden below with that honeydew dropping down, that sticky stuff?
Corey looks like he is ready to answer this question.
No, they have not. They haven't damaged the plants beneath. And you call them woolly aphids. You're sure that's what they were?
Well, I don't know. A friend said that.
Because there are woolly aphids that are, native, and they're, you usually see them on like beech trees. In most cases, they're not problematic. If it is really a woolly aphid, they're not usually that problematic. And I've never really seen an outbreak where it was the entire tree covered. I mean, did it truly look like it was completely infested, or was just a couple spots?
Yes. And when I would use the sprayer, a hand pump sprayer, mm-hmm. there would be a cloud of the little tiny white aphids rising up. And my friend called honeydew, that sticky stuff that was down below on my pumpkins and on my flowers. It was really gross.
Yeah. At this point, they've already been killed off for the year. I mean, because we've had that frost. I wouldn't worry too much about it. I would just, I think you can relax for this year. If you see it happening again next year, then I might, try to maybe even call in like an arborist or a tree company to come in and take a look at it. I would say it might have just been one of these outbreaks that comes and goes like any other sort of natural population. You'll see these spikes
some
and valleys.
Kind of aphid?
Yeah.
It
could have been a woolly aphid. I wouldn't worry too much about it anymore. Wait until next year, see if it comes back. But you will see these population outbreaks of things like aphids that just come and go. One year they might be bad. The next year they're not going to be quite as bad. So with it just happening really one time, I would say you don't have anything to worry about yet.
Yeah. Thanks. Thank you.
Maybe they'll spread the word about you and your spray bottle, Cynthia. So.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much. Thanks for listening. And we have Rob on the line. Hey, Rob, what's your question?
Yes, I have a question about composting. I have a tumbler compost, and it's well composted. And I was wondering, as I put my vegetable garden to bed, should I put that into the garden now, or should I wait until the spring when I'm doing my spring planting?
I think it's always a good time to compost. but yes, this is my favorite time to add compost to my beds because you can take advantage of the worms and all the critters to mix that around for you during the dormant season. And so I like to top my beds off with compost and then also some kind of mulch, whether it's leaves or whether it's wood chips, just to protect that surface layer. But yes, this is a great time to do that. And then congratulations on getting a great harvest from your tumbler.
Oh, good. Well, thank you. Then I have a statement to make about composting leaves. So a friend of mine who's a horticulturalist, he recommended to me, I have four big trees in my yard, three oaks and one healthy ash tree. And he said to go over the leaves with a lawnmower, which I do a lot. And then I use that for my, not compost, but put around the trees like 15 feet kind of in diameter. It makes really a nice bed, and they deteriorate every year and they almost become like soil by the fall. And that's what I used, to mulch my trees. And it's really worked out well for me. And then I pick up my neighbor's leaves too, because I have for my vegetable gardens and stuff like that. So,
man, I wish you'd been my neighbor when I was dealing with a lot of trees. Well, thanks for that statement, Rob. We sure appreciate it. And good luck with your composting. We are going to take a quick break, and we will continue our gardening show after that. If you have questions, now's a good time to call. The number is 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our November gardening show. My guests are Madison Tree Care and Landscaping CEO John Butcher, Civic Garden Center Director of Education Mary Dudley, and Cincinnati Nature Center Director of Conservation Corey Christopher. If you have questions for them, and we know you have questions for them, call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We have a caller on the line right now. Hey, Larry, thanks for calling. What's your question?
I have a question about moles. I mean, it's like they are just, someone turning them in my yard. I'd never seen them come through so fast. And we had, my neighbors and I had gotten, they'd gotten rid of them mostly a couple, 3 years ago. But I know that we've had the cicadas and I guess the grubs are back and all that. And I don't like to put down the insect because I want to keep the earthworms and stuff. So I'm just wondering how to get rid of them.
Okay, that's a great question. Any mole advice?
I'm not a mole expert, but if you're not going to use the chemicals, your other options are inline traps, right, where you're going to set the traps within the line. Maybe you have a mole expert help you with that. The other option would be to get a really ferocious pet that likes attacking moles. some cats actually do that well. Jack Russell Terrier may be a good dog species for such a thing.
Well, keep your cats inside, first of all. But I would say the other option, so I was going to, I do like the, there are some traps. What I have done, because I had a terrible mole problem for the past 2 years, I have made peace with the moles. Truly.
You have a mole truce?
Nothing I do is really going to keep them away forever. And I decided, if I've created an environment where these critters want to come in and live in the dirt, and it's going to, my yard, there's certain places where it just looks horrible for some months, and then they move on to another place. And I've decided I'm just going to, that's the mole's place for right now. I'm still going to mow it. I'm still going to do what I need to do. But I'm going to let them have that, tiny little piece of my yard to just go at it. And I've actually had a lot of pleasure now in seeing when people come over, you've got a mole problem. Well, it's not a problem from the mole's perspective.
Like, you got a mole neighbor.
Yeah. So I've just learned to embrace it. I started reading a little more about moles and I'm going to embrace this and it doesn't bother me. It does bother me some, but not near as bad as it used to.
Do they have benefits for soil health? I mean,
they definitely will aerate the soil and they'll help take care of pest problems. And they're down there doing their thing. We talk about the vertical mulching. Moles are doing that. They're aerating your soil and they're doing their best. It's just when we have, flower beds or turf on top of the soil that they're killing, that's when we don't really like it. But the moles, they're doing their best to help the soil health.
Yeah. How do you feel about that, Larry? Do you think you can make peace with the moles?
I guess I have so far. It's my payoff for getting rid of the skunks. And of course, we had a cicada infestation 2 years in a row. So I guess that's my payback. So.
Yeah. Well, for whatever reason, you're very popular with the moles, so maybe try to take it as a compliment.
Okay, well, I'll make peace.
Okay. Well, thanks for your call, Larry. Thanks for listening. We also have some email questions from our listeners. From Nancy, she says, for a raised bed, when is the best time to add purchased mulch? For example, the black cow bags, now or in late winter? Anybody have thoughts on that?
Again, I would put it on now, because then you can take advantage of the critters that are still active in that top layer of soil before it gets a little bit cooler. And just with our Cincinnati weather patterns, which are not predictable, you might be out there on a nice day in December, you know, wanting to do some of that work. And, you know, if your bags have frozen because they've been in the garage or been somewhere else, it's going to be a little bit harder to apply them. So I would be cautious about walking around in garden spaces when they're very wet. And so you do want to think about that. Make sure that if you're walking around in your garden, you're not hearing slurp, slurp, slurp. If you're getting things like... Right? Exactly. Good job. If you're getting things that are sticking to your boots, it's probably not the best day to be digging or in there, just because you can collapse that soil structure. So I would go ahead and put it on now. Something you do have to be a little cautious with that I've heard from other gardeners with black cow is just salt content. Mm. And so if you are making sure that you're using it in a thin layer and mixing it up with leaves, or maybe, again, another type of wood chip, a natural mulch that you can use, but just maybe use that a little bit lighter than you have in the past, just because I have heard that there's some of that salt buildup.
Okay. We have more callers on the line. Hey, Don, thanks for calling. What's your question or comment?
Yes, I have a maple tree in Southern Indiana. It's about 40 years old, and the lower branches do not develop many leaves, and eventually some branches die off completely. I wonder if there's anything I can do to help this tree.
What do you think, John?
Well, I mean, this is a very vague description of, you know, like, I don't know what's going on with the tree, but without knowing if there's a bug or some other problem going on, certainly what we talked about earlier today with the vertical mulching or the radial trenching, those are things that trees just like and help boost good health in general. I don't know if this is a normal sloughing off of lower branches because the upper canopy is so full that they're shading out the lower limbs, which is normal and fine and healthy, or if this is a scenario where there's actually a problem and I can't tell from
that. A little hard to tell. Yeah.
Well, there's another maple tree about 40 feet away that is not exhibiting the same condition.
What kind of maple trees are they?
I'm not real sure. It's not a sugar maple. I didn't plant it, so I don't know what it is.
So, I mean, a lot of maples have problems with girdling roots. Look around the base of the tree where it's going into the ground and see if you see like a messy system of roots that almost looks like a spider web wrapping around the trunk. That can be something that really stresses out a lot of maple trees.
No, I see the roots radiating out from the tree.
Hmm. Well, Don, maybe if you want to try to take if you want to try to take some pictures maybe for us, you can email those to talk@wvxu.org. That's talk@wvxu.org. Maybe when we see some pictures, we can have our experts look at those and maybe email you back.
Okay, the county extension guy said that it just didn't like the ground that it was in.
Oh, gosh.
Well, that would be a good reason to do the vertical mulching or something like that.
Oh, okay. Well, I hope that helps, Don. Thanks so much for calling, and good luck with that maple, 40 years old. I'm sure you want to keep it around. We also have Paula on the line. Hi, Paula. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
I started out having a fungus on bee balm. I had gotten a plant that did not have fungus, and then I planted it along a wall that was like a rock wall. And I, from this show, I don't know when, I got the impression that maybe it started because it was too wet. So this year I moved the bee balm to a different area, but it seems like the bee, and I pick the leaves off, like I remember hearing, I think, that you pick them off as they come on. But I still have the fungus, and I think it spread to my other plants in the new location. So I don't want to get rid of the bee balm altogether. And I believe I read somewhere that you have to, like, take all the foliage off all the plants, you know, take all of that out. I have a bunch of zinnias and all kinds of things planted in this one area that I leave for the birds, you know. And so, but I had read you have to pull all of that out in order to get rid of the fungus and basically start over. So I was going to ask about it, and I'm not one of those super gardeners. I'm like, put the stuff in the ground and let it grow.
Yeah.
Person, so.
Well, yeah. I know, we have some people chomping at the bit to answer this question here, Paula. Yeah. You want to go first,
great.
Corey?
Yeah, it sounds like you've got powdery mildew, which bee balm is very prone to, as are zinnias. One thing you could do, you do not have to pull all the leaves off. You do not have to start all over.
Okay.
What you could do is, you said you have a whole bunch of different plants in the same area.
Is that right? Yes, I just tried that this year. I moved it to a different area and I planted zinnias in there and a bunch of wildflowers.
One thing to do with powdery mildew is to thin out the way you're planting. So don't put as much stuff in there. So powdery mildew, it is because of moisture, but it's also if it doesn't get enough airflow through your plants to keep them dry and the moisture sits on the leaves, it can lead to powdery mildew. So just by having fewer plants in an area can sometimes help with the powdery mildew issue. And then obviously, you know, don't overwater with especially bee balm as a native that's drought tolerant. Once it's been in for a season, you shouldn't really ever have to water it.
Yeah.
And I never water. Okay. I'm so bad. I don't water anything. I just, leave it. So.
I would say you're part of a very large audience of people that gets powdery mildew on their bee balm. If you're harvesting it for herbal remedies, make sure you're doing that in the spring before that predictably comes on. But what we've been doing at Civic Garden Center is planting things that are a little bit shorter than the bee balm just to have that little masking too. So you could plant something that was a little bit lower grower so that the bee balm's this nice thriller that comes up through the middle, and then those leaves that get those spots and that fungus are actually hidden behind something else.
And they do make a cultivar of bee balm now that is more resistant to powdery mildew, but to me it just, you don't plant quite as, I have had success with just not planting as many, but.
Okay. So maybe uncrowd the box, and that would be a big thing. I don't have to pull out all of the stuff.
No.
Like, is the fungus going to be there? If it went to my zinnias and yarrow and things like that along the same area, I can just leave all of that there and it'll come back, right? Without having to do it, without it having the mildew.
Yeah, well, so powdery mildew actually is like a representative of a group of funguses, and a lot of them are species specific. So once you've got it in your garden area, it's going to be there. Just depending, we had such a wet spring. So many things were susceptible to that. And it's not going to bother your pollinators that much. So if you're not trying to harvest those leaves for herbal remedies or edible things that you're doing, I would appreciate that you've got an ecosystem going on that includes fungus.
Yeah, and it's everywhere. It's everywhere all the time. So even in the perfect garden, there's going to be powdery mildew in there.
If you had a spot in the yard where you could move it to that has better airflow, better drainage, you're going to reduce the chances of getting the powdery mildew.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Paula, best of luck. Okay. Thank you so much for calling. We sure appreciate it. We need to take another quick break. When we'll come back to wrap up our gardening show. If you have questions, delay no more. Call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We've got some emails to get to after the break. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our November gardening show. My guests are Civic Garden Center Director of Education, Mary Dudley, Cincinnati Nature Center Director of Conservation, Corey Christopher, and Madison Tree Care and Landscaping CEO, John Butcher. We're running out of time for them to take your questions, so give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. I will tell our experts we've got a caller on the line. We've got a bunch of emails, so I think we're entering our lightning round of today's show. Hey, Jeff, thanks for calling. What's your question?
Yes, so I have several grape cultivars in Montgomery County, Ohio. Some of them are very old Concord vines, and some of them are more recent plantings. Each year, I try to be organic. Each year I get really large numbers of clumps of grapes, but almost every season I end up getting some sort of fungal infection that is on almost every cultivar and every clump, and I don't really get much harvest at all. So I would like any input on how to improve in as organic a manner as possible. How can I improve that harvest?
Well, I do have to say I have seen what you're discussing in some of our community gardens, especially on some of these older vines. You get these nice, beautiful bunches of green grapes that just, you know, start to kind of fall apart and collapse from the inside. The result of this has been, you know, that wasps and other things are like, oh, great, my turn. And so we, as organic gardeners and trying to really limit some of those inputs, we actually have had to take out some of our grapevine arbors. Another pest that's coming on is this spotted lanternfly larvae are starting to attach onto some grapevines in the area. And so it's becoming a little bit more arduous to be able to manage that crop. So unfortunately, I do not have an idea for you right now.
Have you taken a soil sample in to have it tested?
I did quite a few years ago, probably 6 to 8 years ago.
I might take another soil sample just to get a more recent update on what's going on. It may not be anything in the soil, but there might be some you know, nutrition the soil needs to help the plant fight off this fungus.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If I wanted to go the direction of less organic, but still as low chemical input as possible, do you have any additional comments?
There are some wonderful resources that you can use for natural orcharding and vineyarding. I would be happy to send those to you. I would need to do a little bit of research offline and send those to you later. So if you want to send an email to talk, then I can follow up with you and get a couple more ideas. This is obviously a very heavily researched field because, you know, grapes, very high economic important crop. So I just would want to know that I was giving you that most up-to-date information.
Yeah. Jeff, if you want to send us an email, talk@wvxu.org, we'll make that connection for you.
And I think you should check with your local extension agent. They can be really helpful on a lot of these fruit crops.
Yeah. Well, I hope that helps, Jeff. Thanks so much. We now have a bunch of emails that we have been piling up. Sorry for the delay on these. We got an email from Nancy for a raised bed. Oh, we already had talked about Nancy's raised bed. Ginger asked if any of the experts can recommend some types of viburnum shrubs that do well in our area.
Arrowwood viburnum. Viburnum dentatum. It is the native one. And I know I love my natives, but it really is the best. It tolerates drought. It'll be fine for the cold.
Okay.
Yep. Arrowwood.
Great. We have a question from Mindy. Mindy says, I have several ornamental beeches in my yard, including a tricolor and a contorted European beech. I have not seen, as far as I can tell, evidence of beech leaf disease on them. And I'm wondering, has it hit Cincinnati as of yet, or is it still more up in northern Ohio areas? If it hasn't hit Cincinnati yet, does it make sense to treat my beech trees now or wait until I see evidence of disease? Do you have thoughts on that, John?
I haven't seen this be a problem in the properties that I'm working with, and I am really hesitant to just start treating with a bunch of chemicals before there's a problem, or at least a problem in the area. So I would keep an eye on it, keep ears to the ground, but I wouldn't start the treatment cycle yet.
Okay. And we have a question from Karen. What should I be doing to prepare my raised beds for next year? Do you have thoughts on that, Mary?
Yes. Make sure that you are topping them off with compost, making sure that you're also pulling out the plants that are done. So I think that, you know, we balance the line between lazy gardener and efficient gardener. but you really don't want to leave those plants in there for too long because they can invite disease. So think about pulling those out. If they were healthy plants this year, add them to your compost pile and let them age. And think about your crop rotation. So I like to rotate crops every 3 to 4 years, and so that I'm not growing tomatoes in the same place all the time. And so if that looks like you might want to expand a bed, or you might want to actually remove a bed space and turn that fallow, put on a cover crop, and then start a new one. So those are the two things I'm doing right now, making sure all of my plants are being composted, topping off, and then looking at my succession cycle.
And we have an email from Neil. Neil writes, I think that I have spruce spider mites attacking my hemlocks, blue spruce, and bird's nest spruces. I've tried washing them off with high power spray, applying insecticidal soap, as well as neem oil on biweekly intervals. I'm still having damage. Any advice?
So there's a really easy check for spider mites, and you take a white piece of computer paper, put it underneath and strike the branches with a pen or a stick or whatever, and then turn the paper upside down and then put it back upright and take your hand and smear it across the paper. And if you're seeing like little greenish brown smears, that's telling you that you've got spruce spider mites that are actively working on your plant. If that's the case, certainly there are traditional miticides that can work against those. And there are some more organic and nature friendly options that you can use for that too.
Yeah. And he said he's tried all these things with insecticidal soap and neem oil. Is that just not tough enough?
I think mites are a little bit of a trickier problem. And sometimes you do need something really specifically driven to control mites to have success there.
Okay. We have a question from Sophie. I have some white spots on my parsley. Often my herbs turn white as the summer goes on. It does not look like it's bugs on the leaves, just white splotches. Is it still okay to eat? Any thoughts, Mary?
Yeah, so it sounds like you might have some bleaching. You just might want to pay attention to when you're watering, or if there's any overspray, if a neighbor is putting out any kind of chemical sprays and that gets on the plant, sometimes that can lead to bleaching. So in those two very unknown situations, depending on whether or not you could eat them, I wouldn't be able to tell you. If you know for sure that these white spots are not caused by overspray or some kind of chemical spray, and you're rinsing them and you're taking care, I have seen that little bit of bleaching in organic grows too. And so, yes, in that case, you could eat that.
Okay. Well, that's your answer there, Sophie. We do have a few more minutes for calls. If you want to call, 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. John, you wanted to talk about techniques for mitigating abiotic stress. Talk about what that is and what we can do about it.
So the biggest thing that I would recommend is, like this past year, we had rain. Trees were really prospering in some scenarios. And in other scenarios, they were suffocating, because when soils are saturated, trees aren't able to uptake that water because there's not enough oxygen in the soil. So that's a stress. And then we roll out of that wet, rainy period right into a really dry period. And the number one thing you can do is, when we hit those dry periods at the end of the summer, is actually doing deep, thorough watering of the trees, but infrequently. So like once a week, once every couple of weeks, not all the time. We needed to drought in between. Another technique that we started talking about earlier is something that a lot of people aren't using, but it's called radial trenching. And anytime you have really highly compacted soils or a stress tree or some construction damage, this is where we would take, if it's an existing tree with established root systems, we use an air gun to blow. It's called an air spade or an air knife. And we blow trenches out like a wagon wheel spoke to create a better environment for the roots to grow in and break up the compaction. That does the most amazing job I've ever seen anything do to turn a stressed tree around. And if you're planting new trees in highly compacted, low organic, crappy soil, you do
it's
this
technical term.
Right.
Yeah.
Very technical.
Yeah.
But you do this right off the bat upon planting. And you can do that with a trencher or with mechanical devices, not air spades, because you're not cutting into existing root systems. And that is a great way to give trees a really good start in what would otherwise probably be a tree that just sat there and looked the same for the next 5 years.
Okay. How deep would you go with those?
Typically, we're going about 8 to 12 inches in the soil. When you hit a wall and it doesn't let you get to that 12, you go to the 8 and work on more surface area in other places rather than trying to beat your head against the wall in a tough spot.
Yeah. Mary, we've been talking about composting and mulching and all kinds of stuff. Is there anything we can plant in our vegetable gardens this time of year?
Yes, we're very fortunate in Cincinnati to have several garden seasons. And especially if you have cold frames or weather protection, and if you're growing in a little bit of a microclimate, I noticed that I was driving by an area that was planted right next to a brick wall, and all of those plants looked great, even though most of the plants in my yard are not looking good after that cold snap. So if you take advantage of this microclimates that you might have around protected areas from wind, and then also cover your raised beds or your garden areas with some row cover, which you can purchase. Just looks like white blanket sheeting. Sometimes I've seen people make little plastic hoop house looking things on over their beds, but you could really be growing year round. Those seeds aren't going to germinate outside in less than usually 60 some degrees. And so you can start the seeds indoors and then you could transfer them outside. Just make sure that you are giving them a transition process. It's called hardening off, so that you are not putting it directly from your nice warm windowsill into your garden bed. But if you give it a few days' time, a few extra hours each time, and then you cover that up with a row cover of some kind or a cold frame, then yeah, you could be growing lettuces and herbs and other leafy greens this season.
Wow. Okay. Well, gosh, we've got just, a little more than a minute left. Are you all sharpening your tools right now? Or, I mean, I know we tell people to do that, but is that really happening for any of you?
You clean the tools, get them, you know, because you're not going to be using a lot of them. And then I've got all the seed catalogs coming in now. So it's planning for next year. What went well this year? What didn't go that well this year? Where am I going to move the things? I can't have my tomatoes in the same spot this year. So a lot of planning.
Yeah. Is that what you're doing, Mary?
Yeah, I love looking at the seed catalogs, but I've got some really nice tools right now that I like to keep sharp. I'm using my little flat files, and I'm looking at, you know, oiling up my, you know, other types of equipment, maybe winterizing some things. I'm taking out my rain barrels, and I'm unhooking those from our gutter system so that I'm able to protect those from that freeze-thaw that happens. So, yeah, lots to do still in the garden.
Plenty to do. Okay. And I know your tools are always sharp at Madison, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I have been talking with Cincinnati Nature Center Director of Conservation, Corey Christopher, Madison Tree Care and Landscaping CEO, John Butcher, and Civic Garden Center Director of Education, Mary Dudley. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lucy.
Another successful gardening show. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. And if you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening, and happy gardening.